Taran, you have the floor, please. Thank you.
Thank you. And I'd like to thank the representatives of the Republic of South Africa, of Iraq, and Sierra Leone for their comments and questions. I'm going to try to put together a response very quickly. First of all, context, and responding to your characterization of differentiation between country situations. I'll simply use what we said in the civil rights movement in the US. All different, all the same. And what's remarkable in looking at countries around the world and regional situations is the greater predominance of similarities than distinctions, although great distinctions within. And I could even say, I can even put People's Democratic Republic of Korea, North Korea, on that list, a country that has more than 1 million migrant workers abroad, saying that literally every country has huge challenges. Similarly, every country in the world today is a country of origin, transit, and destination. And Australia and Canada will certainly speak to that vis-a-vis South Africa. What is the concern is the increasing predominance of demand and demand-driven migration, whether regular or not. And fourthly, with that, the commonality of the increase in discrimination, xenophobia, and hostility and exclusion, leading to not just challenges with social cohesion, but threatening, as I said, the very viability of economies. In answer to a couple of questions on what's the way forward, what are the responses, what do you suggest? In our work over 50 years, we've come up with kind of an agenda. I'll highlight just six points, say that I'll put a paper on the back as you leave that has a bit more on that. But I think it's essential that the starting point is a narrative, a discourse, and policy in every country treating everyone as people, equal and free. Secondly, that means a very strong state policy of non-discrimination, of publicly challenging xenophobia and hostile narratives, no matter to whom, and that can be on the basis of religion as well as color, race, or nationality. Thirdly, to ensure that there is ample visibility given to the role and contributions of migrants in a country like South Africa or the others mentioned, the others who spoke. There are significant numbers of people from other countries who are providing the skills and labor needed in sectors where the own population has not the skills or there's not adequate population where the work needs to be done, and so on. And of course, along with that, recognizing the specific challenges of many countries of high youth unemployment, the lack of access to education that would allow people to get the jobs that are there and elsewhere, and so on. Fourthly, an approach of regulation, not control, but regulation, and specifically regulation in the arena of employment, but it also applies to housing, access to housing, to health, and so on. But when I say regulation, it means upholding equally and for everyone minimum standards of decent work, minimum pay, and so on, so that calling on undocumented migration and migrants doesn't have an incentive to undercut employing nationals or anyone else simply because if they're in an undocumented or migrant situation, they can be paid less than the norms and given less decent treatment than everyone deserves and the international labor standards say that everyone is entitled to. I would say fifthly, and this is a concern for many of countries here, develop free movement. And that I could expound on. I've worked with many of the regional economic communities, particularly in Africa, East Africa community, SADC, and so on, I recognize South Africa has particular challenges on this kind of agenda that time doesn't permit elaborating on. I'll just note, however, that just last week, my team delivered to the Southern African Migration Management Project a technical manual for governments across the Southern African Development Community on regulation of labor migration or migration, both in admissions and post-admissions policies and measures. I can say more about that individually. And sixthly, I want to add one piece to this that our framework absolutely insists on gender-responsive specific policies and approaches, given that the risks and situations women and girl migrants and refugees face are distinct and require often distinct responses. Just a couple of other quick notes I wanted to add regarding sources for practice. The UN Network on Migration has developed some indications of what countries are doing in this. I'd like to cite more specifically work we've done, particularly with the European Coalition of Cities Against Racism in conjunction with UNESCO, in which we prepared a now 300-page manual for cities welcoming migrants and refugees, but in that process, developing profiles on 28 main cities across Europe, main and smaller cities as well, on what they've done and how they've welcomed and dealt with discrimination in particular. And the particularly of interest to Iraq is that the Arab Coalition of Cities Against Racism has recently taken up the question of developing guidance for member cities, which would include cities in Iraq as elsewhere, along these same lines. And I'm presuming they will also be developing some specific examples that will be relevant. And similarly, UNESCO, with drawing on the work we've done, is developing a network of cities against racism and cities for migrants in and across Brazil. Finally, just a quick comment to European Union. I'd like to note, having just done a series of national migration profiles of the Western Balkan countries, that actually what the EU does influences pretty directly 34 or 35 countries when we take into account the candidate countries that have to bring their legislation and policy into line with EU standards and directives before they can actually accede to the Union. And I'd also like to remind that of another, I think, exemplary way forward at the EU level, which was the so-called Racial Discrimination Directive of 2000 that's binding on all member states, that established anti-discrimination on a number of grounds as essential policy for states to implement nationally. And I note that several countries in implementing that directive, such as Ireland, added nationality and national origin to the list of prohibited grounds for discrimination under implementation of that directive. And I guess the final thing, going beyond and appreciating the comment on intersectionality, which brings us back to the DPDA, DDPA and the agenda here, is that intersectionality is in fact, explicit in Article 2 of all of the core human rights conventions, that all EU, or most of which all EU member states have ratified, and in fact, most of which all states around the world have ratified. Article 2 being the non-discrimination clause that's common to all human rights conventions and to many ILO standards as well, and that specifically lists the various grounds that have expanded somewhat in later conventions, but that clearly say in every single convention on every single topic, discrimination is prohibited on all of the prohibited grounds. Thank you very much.